This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Big data is getting bigger every day. Every internet search, GPS query, text message, credit and debit card transaction becomes part of a vast data set stored in corporate, institutional, and government servers, hoping to mine the data for information. And it's just getting bigger. 90% of the data that exists has been generated in the past 3 years. We've all heard about how our digital footprints compromise our privacy and security. But in a new book, futurist and science writer Patrick Tucker urges us not to fear big data. He advocates for harnessing that data to level the playing field and make the powerful more accountable. His new book, The Naked Future, What Happens in a World That Anticipates Your Every Move, is filled with examples of how citizens can use data to help them live much healthier lives, realize personal goals more quickly, avoid inconvenience, convenience and danger, and increase our ability to accurately predict the future. Patrick is deputy editor for The Futurist and technology editor for Defense One. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Patrick, you are a futurist, perhaps a little braver than most of us about where technology is bringing us. Early in the book, you write that big data is not them, it's us. Now, what do you mean by that?
Well, we are the origin point for all of the data that we create, and we do create a lot of it with all of our music streaming particularly, but also our posting, our tweeting, and all of our digital interactions we create on the order of 1.8 million megabytes of data on a yearly basis. And to sort of put that in real terms, that's about the equivalent of 9 CD-ROMs a day. Now, not all of it is stored forever. In fact, only about 10% of it is. And a lot of it, like I said, is related to streaming and other activities like that. But all of it says something about you, and you created it. And we're going to reach a point, I argue, in the very near future where instead of feeling like all of that data exists somewhere else solely for use by other parties, by other entities, by invisible folks we can't see that do things with it that we can't know, we're going to be able to use much more of it ourselves because, like I said, it's created through our digital interactions, and our digital interactions are increasingly all of our interactions.
So while many of us perceive data collected from us by Silicon Valley, the NSA, Madison Avenue, being out of our hands, you're writing about putting it back. And a key component in the ability to do this is the growth of the Internet and things and telemetry. So what do you mean by those things first? And give us an example of how those can be used in practical terms.
So the Internet of Things really refers to the computerization of our entire physical environment. 70% of the American population, according to the most recent Pew poll, now walks around with a supercomputer basically in their pocket compared to what computers were doing just a few years ago. So we connect with the Internet now all the time through stuff that we do, but that's not the only example of the Internet of Things. Cisco has anticipated that there's going to be 50 billion machine-to-machine devices communicating all around us in the year 2020. Which is pretty remarkable considering that we're only going to have about 7 billion human beings on the planet around that time. So they outnumber us, these machines that communicate to one another and take up space in our physical world, and that's the Internet of Things. But the amazing thing about it is that as the density of those types of machines grow, as there just gets to be more and more and more of them, our interaction with computers becomes increasingly passive. And what I mean by that is we don't notice that we're interacting with computers nearly so much, even if we are interacting with them more. And telemetry really refers to the constant act of creating data. So it's a medical term originally, and it refers to the taking of data from one place and moving it to another in something like real time. So in a hospital, telemetry takes the form of like the sensors that patients wear that communicate their biophysical signals to someone down the hall, like a doctor or a nurse. And we're going to have that sort of capability all around us in the future, where we're going to have a telemetric sense of what the world around us is doing, and we're going to be creating that telemetric data as well.
All right, let's help us make that jump from that passive generation of data to actually harnessing it. A couple of examples you give in the book are coming up with early warning systems for first responders, early earthquake warning systems that they're experimenting with in Japan. Another example, little Josh going to the school nurse. Can you walk us through?
Right, little Josh going to the school nurse. So Josh goes to the school nurse, and he's been pulled out of class. He doesn't know why. He feels just fine. But based on some of his geotag tweets and a couple of other pieces of data that he's created very recently, the nurse knows that he has a pretty good chance of contracting a flu later in the day because he's going to co-locate with one of his classmates in a science lab, and that person has the flu. So she checks him out, and she discovers that Josh is actually carrying a genetically novel flu type. And so they're able to call the CDC and get it marked. And next thing you know, the entire world is saved from a potential pandemic because of point-of-care diagnostics and also because of data transparency involving Josh. So this is based on it's sort of an extrapolation from a real-world experiment that ran. There were a couple of researchers, one from University of Rochester and some from Johns Hopkins. And what they did is they took a data set of about 600,000 tweets. These were geotag tweets in New York. And they ran them through a semantic analysis. So they looked at the words really carefully, and they taught a program to kind of understand the language in the tweets. And they separated out the tweets that were about being sick from the tweets that were about not being sick, or used the word sick sort of figuratively. And they found that after they did this, they employed an algorithm to look at the different probabilities, but they could anticipate 18% of the person-to-person flu transmissions that were going to occur among the people that they were looking at, among these geotagging tweeters. And that's pretty remarkable when you consider the enormous number of variables that go into predicting, like, who's going to give you the flu today? So what that looks like in the future is you getting a push notification on your phone, it looks like a little text message, telling you that you have a certain probability of getting someone else's flu later today. And that's part of the naked future. This is something that we can all look forward to, is all feeling a little bit better and avoiding interactions that we don't want to have.
Patrick Tucker is with us. He's a futurist and a writer and author of a book called The Naked Future: What Happens in a World That Anticipates Your Every Move. Well, all right, so how far are we from this kind of app that can make that prediction? I mean, throughout the book, we meet engineers and hackers and entrepreneurs and scientists and citizens who you've interviewed that are trying to make these reality. I'm trying to understand how far we are from, you know, Fitbit reading our calories and tracking our sleep patterns to predicting the future.
Well, it's really a function of how many people pick up this behavior, and that correlates pretty roughly to the number of people that pick up smartphones, particularly in terms of geotagged tweeting. So I don't come up with, like, a really firm date, but I think that you can anticipate that when we get to the point where smartphone penetration in the United States reaches 100%, then this sort of capability is going to be open to far more people. But it really depends on your own behavior. If you're someone who geotagged tweets a lot, and you pay a lot of attention to your other friends that do that, then you're much more predictable than someone else. And what I argue is that that's probably an okay thing, so long as you understand all that goes into that. So it's not going to be sort of like a universal thing, but if you're already using Fitbit and you're already geotagging your tweets, then there's a ton of stuff you can start to predict about yourself already. So it's sort of like that great quote from William Gibson, the science fiction writer, "The future is already here, it's just not evenly distributed." For some people, this is already a reality, and I think for everybody else, it's something that feels more and more like reality in the next 10 years.
But putting that information out there, geolocating yourself, geotagging your tweets, showing people where you are and what you're doing, it requires a level of trust that we certainly don't have now. I mean, consider that insurance companies or prospective employers could know that you have type 1 diabetes because of the information that you put out there, or that you may have struggled with mental illness. This means that we have to know whose hands the information is going into in order to trust it. Or do we just have to redefine our notions of privacy?
Well, we have to do all of those things at the same time. And that's sort of the challenge of the next 10 years. We do have to redefine our notions of privacy, and we do have to first reconcile ourselves to something that's really inevitable, and that is that we are just going to start making – we're going to be creating much more data. We're going to be creating on the order of 44 times as much data in the year 2020 as we were in 2009, and we have to just surrender to that inevitability. Now, that's a little bit different from saying – I don't want anything that remotely resembles privacy anymore, but we do have to recreate it, and we do have to recreate it largely from scratch, because only by doing that can we move towards the best possible future, and that's really what I want for us.
Patrick Tucker, a futurist and science writer, thank you so much for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Patrick's new book is called The Naked Future: What Happens in a World That Anticipates Your Every Move. There are loads more examples in the book and reviews at wordofmouthradio.org. The World Wide Web turned 25 this month. Time to step out on its own. You may have heard murmurings about the U.S. ceding control of the Internet. Sounds kind of scary, right? Well, up next, we'll cut through the hyperbole and explain what the decision really means for the future of the Internet.